So we've been following a theme of God's signature song. So I'm going to do the Bible reading and see if you can spot it. Reading from Ezra chapter 3, verses 1 to 13. And I'll see if I can do as good as Corin did this morning with all the dodgy names. So here we go. I'm going to have to find a light because you know what? I'm living in the joy of bifocals. So. When the seventh month came, and the Israelites had settled in their towns, the people assembled as one man in Jerusalem. Then Jeshua, son of Jozadak, and his fellow priests, and Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, and his associates began to build the altar of the God of Israel, to sacrifice burnt offerings on it, in accordance with what is written in the law of Moses, the man of God. Despite their fear of the peoples around them, they built the altar on its foundation and sacrificed burnt offerings on it to the Lord, both the morning and evening sacrifices. Then, in accordance with what is written, they celebrated the Feast of the Tabernacles with the required number of burnt offerings prescribed for each day. After that, they presented the regular burnt offerings, the new moon sacrifices, and the sacrifices for all the appointed sacred feasts of the Lord, as well as those brought as freewill offerings to the Lord. On the first day of the seventh month, they began to offer burnt offerings to the Lord, though the foundation of the Lord's temple had not yet been laid. Then they gave money to the masons and carpenters and gave food and drink and oil to the people of Sidon and Tyre, so that they would bring cedar logs by sea from Lebanon to Joppa, as authorized by Cyrus, king of Persia. In the second month of the second year after their arrival at the house of God in Jerusalem, Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, Jeshua, son of Jozadak, and the rest of their brothers, the priests and the Levites, and all who had returned from the captivity to Jerusalem, began the work, appointing Levites 20 years of age and older to supervise the building of the house of the Lord. Jeshua and his sons and brothers, and Kadmiel and his sons, descendants of Hodaviah, and the sons of Henadad, and their sons and brothers, all Levites, joined together in supervising those working on the house of God. When the builders laid the foundation of the temple of the Lord, the priests in their vestments and the trumpets and the Levites, the sons of Asaph, with cymbals, took their place to praise the Lord as prescribed by David, king of Israel. With praise and thanksgiving they sang to the Lord, "He is good, his love to Israel endures forever." And all the people gave a great shout of praise to the Lord because of the foundation of the house of the Lord was laid. But many of the older priests and Levites and family heads who had seen the former temple wept aloud when they saw the foundation of this temple being laid, while many others shouted their joy. No one could distinguish the sound of the shouts of joy from the sound of weeping because the people made so much noise and the sound was heard far away. So the book of Ezra begins with people returning from exile, but they were in exile first. The Jewish nation were in exile because of their disobedience to God. They had sinned. They'd broken their commitment to God, and the consequence of this was 70 years of exile. Not only that, but the destruction of the temple and the city of Jerusalem, all the physical manifestations of their life, their faith, were taken from them. And you can read this story in Kings and Chronicles to watch this journey of falling away from God. But our focus today is on their return from exile. The book of Ezra opens in the year 538 BC. It's 48 years after Nebuchadnezzar destroyed Jerusalem, defeated Judah, and took the Jews away into captivity. Nebuchadnezzar dies, and his successors weren't that good, apparently, because in 539 BC, the Persians overthrow the Babylonians, not long before Ezra started to be written. So the Israelites were, and the Jews were, in captivity. So what does that mean, to be in captivity within the Babylonian and Persian communities? Well, when I think of captivity, I think of chains and jail cells and no food and hard work and, you know, all that sort of stuff. You know, you're not meant to be having fun, I'm imagining. But apparently, according to the books I've read, the Babylonians are quite nice in lots of ways. They didn't really treat them that harshly. They had a relaxed attitude toward their captives. Some owned lands, had homes, and had jobs. And a few, like Daniel, Mordecai, and Esther, rose to prominent positions. So it sounds quite nice, really. But of course, it wasn't, because they were strangers in a strange land. They didn't have the freedom to live the way that they wanted to live, and they didn't have the freedom to worship the God that they wanted to worship in the way that they were told to worship him. So I wonder whether any of us are in sort of similar situations. We're quite comfortable. We have a place. We've got what we need, basically. But there's something not quite right. Maybe we're not actually where God intends us to be. And maybe it's really important to listen to God's voice in that. So we've been looking at the theme of God's signature song, and you may have spotted it in the reading. It was in Ezra 3, chapter 11. It's sung at a moment of intense relief and joy. God, through his faithful prophets, predicted the people of Judah would be taken into captivity because of their sinfulness. And those who were returning were a mixed bunch. So they'd been sent to exile, and some of those who were coming back were part of that cohort who had gone into exile. So the community that were coming back were a mixture of older people, people who had remembered what it was like in the time before captivity, before the loss of the temple, before the loss of the city of Jerusalem. But there were also people who were coming back who had been born into that captivity. So they'd known nothing different other than, I guess, the stories that they'd been told by the people that they were living with. But they were all of them, whatever age they were, living in the hope, the fulfillment of the promise that they would return. So as God had predicted that they would go into captivity, he had also predicted that he would bring them out of captivity. And so there was a hope that this would happen. And now, at this moment in time, they are living in the fulfillment of that hope and that promise. So they've been living with the hope of it, and now they're in it. They've actually returned to their city, to their homeland, and they are being given permission by those who held them captive to rebuild the temple that will honour God. It's a wow moment for me when I was reading it. I was just thinking, God, I wonder what that felt like to actually put your foot back onto the land that you never thought you'd see maybe in your generation, but you knew God promised it would come, but actually you're living in the fulfillment of it happening at that moment. It's a new beginning, a fresh start. It was a big deal for the Jewish nation because the temple particularly was the focal point of their city, but it was a focal point of their nation. It was their national identity as believers in God. It was where God's presence met the people. It was an essential part of their spiritual community. The joy must have been overwhelming, and they gave at that moment all the glory to God. It was all about praising him. So the reason that that happened was because God had a plan. I think I've spoken about that in the past. God has a plan. But the reason that that all happened was because God predicted. So God said to Isaiah, I think, where is it? I found it on my page. Isaiah 44, 28. It says this: "Who says of Cyrus, he is my shepherd and will accomplish all that I please. He will say of Jerusalem, let it be rebuilt, and of the temple, let its foundations be laid." Now that's written 149 years before King Cyrus becomes King Cyrus, so before he's born even. And God has a plan. He knew it was going to happen, and then he had the rescue plan coming in and saying, but don't worry, I won't abandon you, I won't leave you there. So whatever is happening, God is in control. It's fascinating to think that actually King Cyrus isn't a Jew. He doesn't necessarily believe in God in the same way that the Jewish people do. And God uses him anyway. He uses somebody that isn't of his own nation. And I think, for me, that gives me hope a little bit, because I look at the world around me and I look at the world leaders, and there are some interesting world leaders at the moment. And I think it's okay, because God is in control and he can use whoever he likes to fulfill his plan and his promises. Yeah? But he can. And so I mustn't let my worries, if you like, about who's in leadership at the moment, fill up my heart and mind with fear. Because actually I can say, God is in control. He's bigger. And he's got it. So we go back to that moment of joy. They've got back to their homeland. They've been given permission to build this temple, to start, if you like, it's the beginning of the rebuilding of their nation. And then in chapter 3, verse 12, it says, "But many of the older priests and Levites and family heads who had seen the former temple wept aloud, and when they saw the foundation of this temple being laid, while many others shouted for joy." So why the weeping? I've spoken about it being a moment of joy and, you know, exhilaration and living within God's promises, but these guys are crying. Now, it may be that they've been weeping for joy. It could be that once again they feel that they can obey the law, that they can observe the proper sacrifices, that they would one day have a holy of holies, that life that they'd had before would be the same. So it could have been a weeping for joy. But I have to say that every commentary I read didn't say that at all. Said the absolute opposite. It says that the older priests and Levites and family heads, so these were the people who'd seen the temple before and what it looked like. They could remember its splendor and glory. I mean, if you read the description of the temple, it was amazing. And it probably, you know, took your breath away. So they were looking at that and thinking, but, you know, this foundation we're laying here, there's no way that this temple is going to resemble this one over here. They were maybe mourning that loss. But not only that, there's a sense, I think, of mourning who they were as a nation back then. If they were a rich nation then, I forgot to research this, I'm sorry, so if I'm wrong, sort me out. But they built the temple themselves with their funds and their donations and their giving and their sort of pulling together of their resources. And the reason this temple is now going to get built is through the donations of their captors. As in Ezra chapter 1, King Cyrus says to the people, give them what they need to make this happen. And so they're having to be very humble and accept these gifts to rebuild the temple for their God. It's a very different place to be to where they were before. The Ark of the Covenant was no longer there. Or maybe they were just realizing that they're living in the stark realization that what had been lost through their disobedience would never quite be the same again. They were focusing at that moment on what had happened in the past, I think, on what was lost rather than what they could rejoice in today. So, there's potentially a movie clip here. We'll hope for the best, shall we?
Abuelita runs our house just like Mama Imelda did.
No music! No music!
No music!
I think we're the only family in Mexico who hates music. And my family's fine with that. But me?
Be back by lunch, mijo.
Love you, Mama! I am not like the rest of my family.
Hola, Miguel.
Hola. Muchas gracias.
De nada, Miguel.
Hey, Nancy. Sit down. Roll over. Shake. Fist bump. Good boy, Nancy.
Thank you. Stop it there.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Thanks. Okay, so this is the movie Coco. If it's quite funny, I'd recommend it. It is about the Day of the Dead, so, you know, don't be worried about the skeletons. But it's fine. it's a clip here that shows Grandma. Okay, Grandma, as you see it right at the beginning, she puts up this photo and has torn out somebody's face. That happens to be her grandfather. She's got a bee in her bonnet, and she's not very happy because she believes that her grandfather, a musician, had deserted her mother when she was a child, and she blamed his love of music for this. I won't ruin the end for you. You can go see yourself, but it's a lovely story, as always, because it's a Pixar thing of me, but she is stuck. She's stuck in the past. Now, her mother's very old now, so she can't, and doesn't speak, so that she can't get the real story. She can't figure out what's really going on. There's no communication. So she's just stuck in what she believes her memory holds. And then we have Coco, who's obviously got a passion for music, has got this natural gift to engage with his passion, and his grandmother is relentlessly telling him to just leave it alone and just don't even go there. And he is stuck himself now because he has this dream and this desire, but he's stuck as well. So his grandmother can't let go of the past, and it's stopping her grandson growing and flourishing in the gifts that he's been born with. Grandmother allows the pain of the past to stop those around her living in complete joy. Now, you know, the story does say, you know, they're not miserable. You know, it's not like there isn't some joy in their lives, but there's not a letting go of a full growth and a full joy that that he could live in. So she's not moving forward and she's not letting go. She's allowing the past to rule not only her future, but the future of her family. So if we go back to the Jews in Ezra, those who were weeping were right. The temple would never be what it was in the past. But leading towards exile, the people who met and worshipped in this amazing edifice didn't have the right heart. They weren't living in obedience to God. So although they had this amazing temple to worship God in, it didn't stop their journey into exile. So maybe it was a bit of a mistake to dream of that past, because actually they didn't get it right then, which is why they ended up in 70 years of exile, you know, that they've had to live through and come out the other side. Now, I'm not saying it's bad to reflect on the past, and we can hopefully learn from what has happened previously, from things that have gone well, but also from things that have gone wrong. I mean, Glyn did this whole thing this morning, which was hilarious, a load of sayings where that you might encounter when people are focusing on the past. So things like, you know, in my day, we didn't, I don't know, have problems with electricity because we had candles. I don't know what I mean. I don't know. But one of the things he said was, life was so much better without the internet, because we talked to each other. No, we didn't. We read books. It's so much easier to hide your face behind a book, as you know, just as easy than behind a computer. So, okay, have a think. What thought popped into your head then about things that you might say? You know, in my day, anybody got any that's popped into their head? Oh, yeah. Didn't have mobile phones. Could get away with so much more when people didn't know where you were, right, on Find a Friend. So it's all good, it's all good. Anyway, you know what I'm getting at, yeah. There's sometimes we do, all of us, hark on about the past, okay? It's not age-related, you know, I have to say. I've known some young people whinge about change, you know, so it's not necessarily an age thing. We often look back to the past, though, with rose-coloured glasses and forget it's had its own problems. And as the older Jews in Ezra seem to have forgotten, that their disobedience to God had got them exiled in the first place. The problem comes when we focus too much on the past to the point that it stops us living in the here and now and stops us moving forward. We must be careful that when reflecting on the past, we don't stay there and rob today of its joy. How can we sing God's signature song if we're stuck in the past, living in the fear of what today holds? So those who were praising God at the building of the second foundation were praising God for their salvation today, that in that day, praising him that they were living in the fulfillment of his promises and seeing a hope for a future for their nation. And, you know, and the realization that God had not abandoned them. He had been with them the whole time. There's another clip now, I hope.
Okay, that should do it.
So exciting! Let her rip, Lewis!
Quickly! Uncle Joe can't hold on much longer.
Everybody ready?
Go, Carl!
Yay!
Did it work?
Oh, no.
No. I didn't know it. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
You failed!
And it was awesome!
Exceptional!
Outstanding!
Better.
From failing, you learn. From success,
Not so much.
If I gave up every time I failed, I never would have made the meatball cannon.
I never would have made my fireproof pants. Still working out the kinks.
Like my husband always says.
Sorry. I had to put it in because it was so fun. Well, I found it amusing. But there we go. So, see, this is a cartoon that expresses the point that it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to make mistakes if we realise they're mistakes, I guess, and then improve on and look back and reflect and then move forward by having learned from our mistakes. Apparently, Thomas Edison used 2,000 different elements before he got to the bit that made a light bulb filament. So, you know, he learnt. Took a while, but he learnt. You know, we would never had a light bulb if he hadn't kept going. So we often learn from mistakes, more from mistakes, sorry, than we think when we get things right. The bit I particularly like was the bit where it shouts at us to keep moving forward. No matter what's happened in the past, good or bad, it's important that we continue to move forward. Isaiah 43, verse 18 says, "Forget the former things, do not dwell in the past." And the important word for me that I thought was the word dwell, because to dwell somewhere, or a dwelling, is to live somewhere or a place where you live. And I don't think it's important that we remember not to live in the past. You know, use what we've learnt there, reflect on the good times and all sorts of stuff like that, but don't live there, because actually we need to live in the present, in today. Let's move forward, living in the promises of God, able to sing his signature song. So how are we doing then? Having said all of that, where are you? Where am I? Are we stuck in the past a little bit? You can be any age to do this, as I've already said. I've heard people of all ages moan about change and harking back to past times. I think we get stuck sometimes because of fear. Fear of making the same mistake again. Fear that it will never be as good as it was in the past. Fear of change. Fearing letting go of what is known and moving on into something unknown. I don't think God wants us to live in fear. I know he doesn't, actually. It says so many times that he is with us. I believe that through the power of his Holy Spirit, we can overcome those fears and move into a place where we can sing God's signature song and know it to be our truth as well. Just happened, you know, because things just happen sometimes when you're looking. I think I mentioned this at Life Group, didn't I? There's this guy that's written, Bob Goff, who's written a book about love. It looks really good. I haven't read it myself, but this is one of the bites from it. When joy is a habit, love is a reflex. And I think what that's basically saying is choose joy. Make a head decision to choose joy. Philippians 4:4 says, "Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice." So choosing joy, it might be a difficult situation, you're uncomfortable in it, but you know God is there because that's his promise. And you can choose to live in his joy in it, and you never know, you might enjoy it by the end, and the love will come. You know, the love of the situation or the love of the people that you're with. And I think that is a truth that we can live in. We can choose joy even when it's difficult. Jesus Christ, it says in Hebrews 13:8, is the same yesterday, today, and forever. So the God who's in the past is in the present and will be in our future. He's never going to change. He will always be there for us. He will always be our enabler, whatever situation we are in. So let's choose joy. Let's sing God's signature song over our own lives, believing and living in the fulfillment of his promises.